following is a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com.
Let me take you back in my life to a moment where there was some soul work going on. I had been away at college for two years. It seemed like forever. I'd been away and I had walked completely away from the Lord doing my own thing. And I remember coming back home to Fountain Valley and living with my mom. So thankful. Thanks, Mom, for that. And being able to have that home and stabilizing my life a bit. But at the same time, feeling like wildly discontented with anything in life. All my friends were starting to get jobs and kind of moving forward in their jobs. And I was working multiple jobs just trying to figure out, like, who am I? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? And in some ways, at times, even arguing with God, even though I'd kind of walked away from Him. But slowly, the Lord began to bring me back to Him again through a process of a Bible study and a friend, and just started to draw me back in again, doing soul work on my life. Still feeling discontented, like, God, what am I supposed to do? Then this started happening. Maybe this has happened to you, or you remember back to a season in your life where this happened. All your friends start getting married. Have you ever been in that spot before? Where it's like you're single, and your friends not only dating, but now they're actually getting married, and you're going to the weddings, and you're reminded of, like, no, you're still not going to get married, right? You're still where I have you. And then wild discontentment, like just feeling like this overwhelming, like at times literally crying at night, feeling like, God, what are you doing? God, what about? God, what about? God, what about? Just this overwhelming discontentment. And maybe that's you, where God has you in this place, or where you're at. I shouldn't say God has you, but you're in that place this morning. And maybe it's not over relationships or jobs, but maybe it's over finances. Or maybe it's over, and I feel like we can all fall into this trap of, like, I wish my family was like their family. Have you ever fallen into that trap before? I wish our family was more like that picturesque family where nothing goes wrong. And we get that sense of, like, oh man, discontentment. Or maybe it is jobs. Maybe you're like, I wish I had the job my brother has or my sister has. They make X amount of dollars. I wish I was able to buy that sort of house or drive those sorts of cars, and discontentment comes in. Right? Or maybe you have neighbors who are like going again to Hawaii. Do you have those neighbors? Like, oh man, they're going there again. Like, I haven't been there in 16. We haven't been there in 16 years, right? Here we go, right? That discontentment starts to wean its way in. And I would just say social media is like the breeding ground of discontentment, right? Because people picture, for the most part, don't put on their social media all the problems that they're having in life, right? They take the pictures of them in Hawaii or their kids all smiling and playing in the backyard. It's like, oh my gosh, they have everything. So I just got rid of that altogether in my life a number of years ago because I would feel the discontentment of all of that. And maybe that's you here this morning, wrestling with discontentment. And I would just tell you this. The thing that the Lord told me back when I was living at my mom's house back in the day, right, was, Jeff, find your contentment in me. Jeff, I have you here in this season for a reason. There's a reason why I'm not moving you ahead in whatever career path you want to take. And there's a reason why you don't have a girlfriend, right? Come on, be easy with that one, right? There's a reason why all this is happening, and I just need you, Jeff, in this moment, in this season of your life, to just push pause and just look at me. Like, look at me. Find your contentment in me. And that was a common theme for a while in my life, and even to this day, I will often go back to those moments where I'm starting maybe in this now in my life to feel discontentment. I'll go back to those early seasons at my mom's house of discontentment and feel like, okay, same thing, Jeff. Find your contentment in me. If you're feeling that this morning, I would say that's Solomon's message to us. And in fact, one of the problems, I would just say, in our culture today is that we're moving further away from the Lord who brings contentment, right? That we're moving further away from his truth and his biblical wisdom. And instead, we're trying to find, and the culture around us is trying to find contentment, happiness, meaning, and purpose in all these different areas that aren't him and do not satisfy. There's all these big questions about who am I and what really is truth, and there's a lot of discontentment. I want you to see this real quick before we jump into our text this morning. Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. Jesus talking. Listen to what Jesus says. And when Jesus speaks, we kind of want to listen, right? I don't know what your views on Jesus are, whether he's Savior and Lord to you, or maybe you think he's just a good teacher. Whichever it is, glad that you're here this morning. And listen to what he says. Listen. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the what?
Rock.
On the rock. And who's the rock? Jesus is the rock. His words are the place that we go, we listen, and we say, okay, I want to do what Jesus does. And listen to what happens. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat on that house. But it did not fall, because it had been founded on the rock. And today we see so many people's lives around us discontented, looking for meaning and purpose, and their house keeps falling down. And they're wondering, why is my house keep falling? Why does the world around me crumble? Why can't I find truth? And Jesus is saying, listen, here's what the wise man does. He comes to me and he builds his house on me. I am his foundation. Look what else Jesus says in that same Matthew chapter 7 verse. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat against that house. And what happens to that house? We know. It fell. And great was the fall of it. So the question this morning is, where are you building your foundation? What's the foundation of your life? And I would argue with you that you will continue to face discontentment in your life until you find the one who brings contentment, the one who says meaning and purpose will be fulfilled in me. And Solomon in Ecclesiastes chapter 6, if you would, turn with me there, Ecclesiastes chapter 6. Ecclesiastes chapter 6. Solomon is writing about people as he's observed. Remember last week we talked about people watching. He's watching people and he's saying, I see so much discontentment in people's lives. Unfulfillment. Lack of meaning. Lack of purpose. And he's probably more than likely writing about himself as well. He's kind of exposing himself as well and saying, this is kind of where I've experienced and where I've been. Ecclesiastes chapter 6. He's going to talk about three people. If you're a note taker, here are the three people that he's going to talk about. He's talking about one person who has riches but no enjoyment, which to us we'd be like, what? How is that even possible? I mean, if you're rich, aren't you enjoying life, right? He's going to talk about the first person who has riches but no enjoyment. The second person who labors and works but has no satisfaction. Who labors and works but has no satisfaction. And the third person, he's going to say, he asks questions, but he gets no answers. The third person asks questions, but gets no answers. So let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 6, verse 1, and let's look at this first person who has riches without enjoyment. I mean, is that even possible? I mean, if you're rich, aren't you enjoying life? Solomon makes this argument. Look at chapter 6, verse 1. He says, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. Remember what he talked about? He said, we are all people who are living under the sun, right? That the sun is above us. We're all living under the sun. And oftentimes, Solomon will write as one who is living under the sun. And what he means by that is a human perspective. He's like, let me give you this human perspective. Maybe not always godly perspective, right? But let me give you the human perspective. And in fact, he says, as I've observed, this thing that I'm about ready to tell you is common among men. I see this everywhere I go. Down every street, I see this is common among men. Look at verse 2. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires. Yet God does not give him power to eat it. Or some translations say he does not have the ability to enjoy it. But a foreigner or a stranger consumes it. He says, this is vanity and it is an evil affliction. Solomon says, as we look at this, he says, listen, riches don't always equate to contentment. Riches and wealth and honor don't always equate to us being satisfied or having meaning and purpose. He says, in this particular case, there's a moment where this person loses everything. All that he or she had worked for all their life, amassed all he could want, it says in the text, he lacked nothing. He had everything. And you and I would look and say, wow, that guy or that lady, she is lucky. She has everything. But in a moment, he loses it all, whether it was a stock market crash or it was an illness that took all of their wealth or bad investments. Or maybe it was the loss of everything they had through life. Maybe they lost their life and it was gone like that. Everything that they had worked for. Solomon wants those who have put their meaning and purpose and contentment in riches and wealth to realize that will not sustain you. Maybe happiness for a moment or for a while, but he's saying, listen, it could be all gone tomorrow. It could be all gone today. It's not worthy of your time and your effort. Don't put all your eggs in that one basket. I can't think of any other analogies right now. But he's saying, don't put it all in wealth and riches and honor, because I know a guy who had everything he wanted and he lost it in a moment to where he didn't even get to enjoy it all. It was gone. In fact, Jesus says this, if you would, keep your finger in Ecclesiastes chapter 6 and turn to Luke chapter 12. And I won't ask you to turn anywhere else this morning. So just, if you would, go to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, but keep your finger in Ecclesiastes chapter 6. And Jesus, I want you to see this, talks about a similar guy. A similar person who put all their eggs in the wealth basket, in the riches basket, in the honor basket. Luke chapter 12, verse 13. Luke chapter 12, verse 13, it says this. Then one from the crowd said to him, Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. But he said to him, Jesus talking, Man, like that, just like that. Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? And he said to them, to both the brothers, Jesus talking, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Let me read that again. Jesus teaching this lesson to these two brothers who are pining over wealth and riches. And he says, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. And then he's going to teach this lesson. The same one Solomon, I believe, would teach today. He says in verse 16, then he spoke a parable to them, a story. The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. In other words, his business was profiting, right? He was making lots of money. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no room to store all my crops, all my money, right? All the things, I mean, business is booming. So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater barns, that is. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And listen to what he says. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Listen to what God says. Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Sounds exactly what Solomon is saying. He said, I know a guy who stored all his wealth up. He's consumed it. And in fact, his life was consumed by it. Meaning and purpose, everything he put into wealth. And he said, but what happens then when that night comes, when that moment happens and he's gone? And Solomon says in our text this morning, A stranger gets to enjoy all of that. He doesn't even get to enjoy it. And look what Jesus' ultimate lesson here is in verse 12, or chapter 12, verse 21. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards who? God. Jesus teaches this whole lesson to these two brothers. I think Solomon is teaching us that same lesson. He's saying, don't be rich in the things of this world, or don't be, better yet, don't be consumed by the riches of this world, because they will never satisfy. You will never find contentment in those things alone. He says instead, same thing Jesus would say, find your richness in who? In the Lord. Find your richness in the things of the Lord. Seek after the riches of the Lord and stop spending all your time, effort, and energy and money on the things that will never satisfy. And then he says, look at Ecclesiastes 6, back Ecclesiastes 6. Thanks for turning to Luke 12, by the way. Ecclesiastes chapter 6. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed has no burial. In other words, he's talking about a man who, in the context of the Old Testament, many kids, big family, maybe too many kids, 100 kids. I mean, that's a lot of kids. Whew, that'd be exhausting, right? But he's saying, listen, here's what I want you to get this idea. The man has a big family, so he's in OT. That's like big family, that's blessing. Like, blessings poured out on you. And he's lived many years, many, many years. And so that too, it signifies blessing. And so Solomon is saying, I know this guy. Lots of kids, big family, lots of years. You would think from the outside looking in, this guy must be blessed. He must be satisfied. He must, in other words, our context maybe would be nice cars, big houses, lots of properties, well invested in the stock market, and he's living a long and happy life. And the Instagram post, right, looks great, right? But what he's saying is, even though this man had all these things, big family, a lot of years, what does it say? But his soul is not satisfied with goodness. His soul was never satisfied with goodness. In other words, he's rich in family and rich in years, but he is not satisfied. And you must wonder to ourselves, how is that even possible? It seems like if he has money and he has wealth and he has a lot of family and he has a lot of kids, certainly his soul is satisfied. And Solomon says, actually, those things are not the things that satisfy. Those things can make us happy for a moment and in a minute. But ultimately, those aren't the places that we go to feel satisfaction. Where do we go? What did Jesus say? Find your riches in who? In God. Find your satisfaction in Him. He would have talked to Jeff as he was at his mom's house, trying to figure out what's going on with my life. Where's that woman I'm going to marry? Where's the job I'm going to have? And he would just say, no, stop, Jeff. Stop, 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 stop. Those things are great, and they could come, and they may not come. I don't know, right? But Jeff, I want you to find your satisfaction in me. And we pine, and we look all over the place. God, what are you doing? God, where are you going? When is this going to happen? And instead, he would just say, pause, wait, wait. Find your satisfaction in me alone. And this story of this guy, it actually gets worse, because look what it said here. It says, his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed he has no burial. This guy lives his entire life, big family, lots of years, his entire life, and no one shows up at the memorial service. What? That he has no burial. There's no honor in his death. There's no honor in his burial. I don't know about you, but I've already kind of thought about like who I'd want at my memorial service, right? I want you all there, actually. Please come. I'm telling you now. Just know. You have in mind like maybe some details of your memorial service. Like my grandma, she lived to be 102, and she had some ideas, and she would collect them along the way. She'd be like, can I, and my mom does this too, actually. They're like, this is the song I want played. Play this hymn, right? Here's the hymn I want. And make sure this person's there, and make sure this is, they're already organizing it out, right? And you maybe have done that. You kind of know the details of your memorial service, but here's the one thing I would guarantee. You kind of could think about it and think who's going to be there, right? Maybe a few coworkers, maybe some people from my church, and maybe for sure, like my family will be there. My family will show up, these people that I've invested in, and they've invested in me, and they'll certainly show up to my memorial service. And we get to this guy, lots of kids, many years, lots of opportunities to influence people's lives. And the text says, indeed, he has no burial. No one showed up. He put all his investments and gifts in the wrong places. And the consequence of that, by the way, is that his soul was never satisfied. But Jeff, he had all these things, and it looked from the outside, from the Instagram post, he was totally happy. But it says he had no satisfaction of his soul. And Solomon actually makes it even sadder. He takes another step into sadness. And I know that this text will probably affect some people differently, but he paints a very graphic picture of the depths of sadness of this man. Look what he says here in verse 3 as he goes on. He has no burial. And he sees this. Solomon says, I say that a stillborn child is better than he. Why is that? How could that possibly be? For it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness, talking about this little child. Though it has not seen the sun or anything, this baby has more rest than that man. Even if he, the man, lives 1,000 years twice, but has not seen goodness, do not all go to one place. What's he saying there? He's saying this baby that never got to see the sun, that only ever saw inside mommy's womb, right? Never made it out, is better off than this man who had a huge family, had lots of years, probably had wealth. This baby is better off. And we ask, well, how could that even be? This baby never even got to live life. And Solomon says, the baby had rest in mom's womb. The baby at least had rest. And this man every night goes to sleep looking for peace and rest and meaning and hope and contentment. And he says he never finds it. In all the things that he had, he never finds it. So the first person that we talk about, we look at, and we say this person was seeking after riches, but they never got to enjoy it, and they never got rest from it. The second person that Solomon brings out as he's people watching, as he is observing, he says this person works and works and works, but never receives satisfaction of the soul. Works and works and works and never receives satisfaction of the soul. Look at verse 7. All the labor of a man is for his mouth. Amen, right? Just always working for his mouth to feed, to feed, to feed. And yet the soul is not satisfied. Whatever you do to fulfill your wants and desires in the physical realm will not fill your wants and desires in the spiritual realm. Whatever you do to work to obtain anything in this life, position, rank, place, work and work and work will never satisfy your soul. In fact, it was never intended to do that. In some ways, we have wild appetites, right? All of us, for whatever it is. Maybe it's food, maybe it's cars, maybe it's houses, maybe it's other things. We have appetites that are always after us. In fact, I don't know if this is true of you, but I can go to a restaurant and I can eat and eat and eat and eat, right? Till I'm so full. Have you ever done this before? And you're like, I could not eat another bite. Have you ever said that? I could not eat another bite. It actually hurts a little bit. I ate too much, right? I'm an idiot. Why would I do that, right? And then the dessert menu comes, right? And you're like, well, just a little bit more. Maybe I can cram just a little bit more inside this thing while I just got done saying I could not eat another bite. And then you go home, right? And it's getting later, a little bit later in the night, and you turn on the TV and you're like, I kind of need a snack. And it's like, how in the world did I get from not being able to eat to eating dessert to now it's like, well, just a little snack, right? I'm the only one, right? No, there's others. Thank you. Whew. Right? I've got to eat something, but the appetite is insatiable, right? It just wants more and more and more. And I'm just talking about food, but there are other areas of our lives that our bodies just say more, take, eat more, do more, get more. Right? And Solomon is saying that appetite will never satisfy your soul. That you will search and seek and search and eat and eat and eat and eat too much, and your soul will never find the satisfaction that it's desiring. In fact, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, you don't have to turn there. Remember, we talked about that eternity-size hole in our hearts that God designed us with. And actually, the only one who can fill that hole is Him. And He designed us with that in mind, that my people who I created will come and seek me. They will seek my face, and they will be found by me, and I will bring life and contentment into their lives. They will never find it in creation, the created thing, right? They will only find it in the Creator. And so the question I have to ask us all this morning is, what are we looking for to fulfill our appetites that isn't working? That we just keep going and going and striving and striving. We're this guy who in verse 7 is saying, I'm just working and working and working to fill my mouth, but nothing seems to be working. And I would just take you back to, again, Jeff in his mom's house saying, Lord, I just want contentment and peace. I want purpose. Give me purpose. And he says, stop, stop. Look at me. Look at me. Find your contentment in me. Seek after me. Look at verse 8. He says, for what more has a wise man than a fool? And we would say, well, a lot, right? Because a wise man is wise and a fool is a fool. But Solomon's argument here is actually he has nothing more than a fool. A wise man has nothing more than a fool when it comes to seeking after, right, satisfaction of the soul. The wise man isn't any better off than the fool because they're both striving to find and to find and to find. Neither one of them has the advantage. Look what it says next. What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? A poor man who knows how to get ahead in life, who raises up his station, who is working and working and working to get ahead. He says, what more does that man have? And he would argue nothing. They're both striving. The wise man, the fool, the poor man are all striving to find purpose and meaning. And he's saying none of those people have the answer. Now, he's not saying we shouldn't work, right? Or that it's wrong for someone who's poor to rise up or to raise up their station. That's not what he's saying. He said that, but the striving and the getting ahead and the raising up of the station is not what will ever bring significance and purpose and contentment. You'll never find it in those things. So stop. Stop and seek the Lord and find satisfaction in Him alone. I look at both of these two that were up here this morning, right? And the satisfaction that they have found in Jesus. And they could have looked everywhere and searched everywhere, high and low. Until the moment where they just said, you know what? I can't do it. I can't do it anymore. I can't keep looking into all these other places. Instead, I'm going to stop and I'm going to say, call out to you, Lord. And Lord, would you fill me? Would you use me? Would you satisfy my soul? Because like only you can. And look what he says here. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping at the wind. You know this phrase, a bird in the hand is worth two in the... I wonder if you do know that phrase, because I'm thinking that's a generational thing right there, right? Because I'm looking over and some people are like, what is that? I've never heard that before. And other people are like, in a bush, right? Of course. So there's the generation gap. Boom. So what it's essentially saying is it's better to hold the one bird in your hand, right? And the thing that you have, be content with the thing that you have, rather than to let that little birdie go on the hopes of catching the two birds in the bush, right? Look what God has given. Be content with the thing that God has given and say, Lord, thank you for this. I'm content with what you have provided for me, rather than to say, oh my gosh, I got to go get this next thing. Now, here's the thing. The reality is, it's not bad to want the two birds in the bush, and God may provide the two birds in the bush. He may provide outside of what you have right now currently, right? In your job, in your relationships. He may, but the overall principle is find contentment in what He's provided with you right now, in this moment. And maybe that's a word for some of you here that are here this morning to say, listen, I just need to be content where He has me. And I need to be content with who He has me being and growing in. And instead of pining and always pushing the envelope and finding and pushing and pushing and not ever finding contentment, instead, Lord, I'm going to stop. I'm going to find contentment solely in you. And if you want to move me on economically, if you want to move me on positionally, relationally, then so be it. I'll follow you there. But right now, in this moment, Lord, I find contentment in you alone. Maybe that's for you this morning. I will say this, there are millions and billions of dollars being spent to make you discontent. Do you know that? I mean, there are marketing agencies that want you to be discontent so that you'll buy your product, buy their product. So it's not a natural flow of our lives to be like, no, I'm perfectly content with everything that I have, right? We're actually kind of working against the curve here. There are people who are saying, listen, I want you to be discontent to see what you don't have, so that you will come spend money with us and find out what you can have. And so I will just admittedly say, this is a hard thing for us to rest in the Lord, to not strive and work and strive and work to find satisfaction and just to say, Lord, I'm going to be content with what you have for me. We know this happens in Philippians chapter 4, verse 12. Paul figured this out. Listen to what he says. This is from the New Living Translation. He says, I know how to live in almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or an empty, with plenty or little. Listen, for I can do what? Everything through Christ who gives me strength. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now, some of you have seen that text before and thought, that's football game text, right? We can score touchdowns through Christ who strengthens me. And that might be a little bit true, but the reality of that text is Paul is saying, whatever station of life, God, you have me in, I can get through it, not because I'm so great or I've disciplined my will so well, but through Christ who strengthens me. That's the context of that verse that says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You mean you want me to be single for 6 years? That was for me, right? You want me to be single and just seek your face and you'll strengthen me? Okay, that's hard, but okay. You want me to work multiple jobs for a really long time and volunteer in youth ministry for a really long time? Because that's what you want for me to do right now and find contentment in you? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, right? And the same thing would be true in your station of life, wherever God has you. He's saying, listen, I don't want you just to try harder or to discipline your will. I mean, maybe you should, but I want you to come to me, find contentment in me, and it's through Christ that I will strengthen you for whatever I've called you to, whatever economic status you fall in. Stop pining after all the things around you and just rest in me, is what he's saying. So the two people that we've looked at so far this morning, moving on to our third. The first one is riches that don't satisfy the soul. Solomon says, I've seen it. If I've seen it once, I've seen it 100 times. People who are looking for riches to satisfy and they just don't. The next one is the one who's working and striving for satisfaction of the soul. Everywhere they're looking, just pining after it. Gosh, if I could just get that, if I could just get that, then I'd be happy. And he says, that never works. And the third person that Solomon observes in our text this morning is the person who has questions without answers. The person who's asking God these questions and they're not getting answers. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Does anybody have questions of God that they haven't got answers for, right? I feel like there's these big, broad, general questions like, God, why do bad things happen to good people, right? That's a huge question. And God, why in the world are you working in this way of all ways? Wouldn't it be better if you just did it my way, right? If I could figure out, why wouldn't it be better if you just did things my way, Lord, right? We've all had those things. Big general questions. God, why? And then I think each one of us has specific questions, maybe to our own lives. God, why did I get sick? Or God, why did this happen to her? And God, why did you take him so early? Like he was so young. Like we have those very specific questions that we ask God. And I think in all those questions sometimes, there's a level of discontentment, right? That, and even some of you maybe have walked away from the Lord. I know people who've walked away from the Lord because they didn't get those questions answered. Or maybe they got them answered, but they just weren't the answers they were looking for. And these questions that Solomon's going to talk about here, they can breed discontentment. And the thought process could be, if I did have the answer, I'm all in on you, Lord, right? If I just had the answers, then we're good to go and we'll move forward. Well, until the next question comes, right? Until the next thing happens. And I think we're always pining, Lord, if I just had a little bit more of the answer, if you would just shine a little bit more light on the situation, then my relationship with you would be better. And the reality is, I believe, that the discontentment is with our relationship with the living God. That the arguments that we have against him, actually, if we had the answers to the questions, it actually wouldn't change anything. In fact, Warren Wiersbe writes this. He says, when a person breaks their arm, the x-ray and the explanation of the x-ray by the doctor is great to have in order to answer the question, why does my arm hurt so bad? Right? There's something going on with my arm, doc. What is it? And takes the x-ray. Oh, you broke your arm. Right? Great to have the x-ray. But the x-ray doesn't do two things. Doesn't heal my arm and doesn't take away the pain. And the reality is true with questions that we ask God. God, if you would just, God, why won't you answer this question? God, what is this going on? We could have the answer, but it doesn't heal the pain or fix the problem. And I would take you back to this. And if maybe this is you this morning, who you've all these lists of questions, and I think they're all okay. We can ask God questions, right? We can say, God, why? God, I don't understand. But I would say, don't let that cause discontentment, that you would walk away from the living God. Don't cause that to say, listen, if I don't get that x-ray, if I don't get to see the answer to the question, then I am not going to walk with you. Because what I would argue is that you walk away from the one who does bring healing over time. There's one that would say, listen, I want to walk beside you, Jeff, in this moment of sorrow or grief or questioning. And I'm the one who will bring you healing and bring you through that moment. But so oftentimes people walk away in discontentment when they don't have that answer to the question. In fact, look what he says here in verse 11. Because we oftentimes go to people, and this is what he says. Since there are many things, or some translations say words, there are many words that increase vanity or emptiness. How is man the better? In other words, there's a lot of chatter that goes on, answers to those questions. Here, let me answer that question for you. Here's what I think God is doing. Here's what I think you did. Here's why the problem. And it's like, whoa, whoa, stop, stop. There's lots of words being shared here, but all towards vanity or emptiness. He said, instead, Solomon would argue, go to the one who is above all things. Go to the one who is in heaven and we are on earth. Don't increase the vanity and emptiness with our words. And I would just argue, go to the Word. There is so much wisdom inside this book, living wisdom. God says, my word is living and active and sharper than two-edged sword. He said, go to the Word, go to wisdom and direction. Don't increase vanity and emptiness in people's lives by just spewing out chatter in words, is what he's saying here. Look at verse 12. For who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow. Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? Wah, wah, right? I mean, he ends it with like, and I don't know, right? I'm unsatisfied. We're all unsatisfied. It's all emptiness, so let's just die, right? That's where Solomon ends this whole idea. And he's saying, listen, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know where you get the answer to those questions or the fulfillment of the soul. But here's the incredible news. Along comes this guy, Jesus, right? And he does an incredible miracles and works. And he calls people to follow him. People who at the time were living meaningless, purposeless lives. And he says, listen, actually, I want to give you purpose. Come follow me. Walk with me. And instead of being fishers of fish or tax collectors, I'm going to make you fishers of men. And I'm going to change your soul, right? I'm going to redeem your soul. God is doing this work on the face of the earth. And he's doing it through me, Jesus would say. I'm going to die on a cross. I'm going to rise from the dead. And if you believe in me, I'm going to give you new life, like we talked about this morning. You're going to walk in newness of life. And that will be days where you will wrestle with contentment. But listen, ultimately, you will find your contentment in me, your purpose in me, your meaning in me. And if you walk according to my Spirit, which will, by the way, come and live and dwell inside of each and every one of you, believe in me, you will have the Spirit to enliven your life, that you will never have to walk another day in sin, in sorrow, in death. Instead, you will walk with purpose and contentment that can only be found in me. That same contentment that Paul found in Philippians chapter 4. He says, whatever station of life I'm in, I can be content because of who Jesus is, the power of Jesus living inside of me. The same contentment I found in my mom's house as I was walking through seasons of discontentment. And he says, just turn to me. Walk with me. Come to me. Stop striving, Jeff, and fighting and try to find all these things that I haven't called you to. Instead, just walk with me. And maybe that's you here this morning. And you're striving and you're fighting. Lord, I want purpose. I want meaning. I'm not finding that in this life. I really want this. I really want that. And I would just tell you this morning, as we sing this last song, as Shannon and Jesse come up here to this last song, and they're gonna lead us in this song. And I really believe it's a worship song for you. It's an act of worship on your part to just come and say, wow, Lord, maybe this is me this morning. You've revealed something to me this morning. And I want to turn it back to you, Lord. If this is true, if what Jeff is saying this morning is true through your word, and maybe I've been looking for contentment in all the wrong places and said, I want to stop and pause this morning and say, Lord, I want to find my contentment solely in you. And so I would just say this last worship song is a perfect opportunity to surrender that to him. Amen? Amen.
This has been a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com or call 714-891-9495. Set free my heart.